is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. What would happen if you could get to work every morning on the bus for free? What would happen if you could take your kids to the movies and get there for free? Would you drive less? Would it help you afford the other things that you need? Public transportation is supposed to be the low-cost alternative. Well, for millions of Americans, it's the lifeline if they can't afford a car or if they live in a city where it's subway or nothing. We're going to talk about how communities all over America are innovating with the cost of public transportation, including, in some places, making it entirely free. Well, what does it take to give residents a free ride? Can any city do it? And once you do it, can you sustain it? But first, let's visit the city that's been having America's most high-profile fight over transit fares lately. New York City is the mecca of mass transit. People ride the subway every year, millions of people. And recently, New York has begun a crackdown on people who break the rules and ride for free. In New York City, it's called fare jumping, but to the cops, it can mean an arrest. Well, joining me now is senior staff writer at Vice, in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, Laura Wagner. Laura, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And David Jones is here. He's a member of the board of the MTA. That's the Metropolitan Transportation Authority in New York. He's also president and CEO of the Community Services Society. David, welcome to you.
Oh, thanks a lot for having me on.
Laura, set the scene for us. How did New York get into a fight over fares?
So it has a few aspects to it. First of all, the subway system has been the subway system has been failing for years now. Trains don't run on time. They're overcrowded. And then on the other side of it is the fare evasion enforcement part, where police officers are stopping people for hopping the turnstiles, ducking under the turnstiles. And this enforcement has been focused on high income and majority Black and Latinx neighborhoods.
Low-income and majority neighborhoods, people of color, in other words.
Yes.
So the crackdown on fare evasion got so serious in New York last month that the Attorney General launched an investigation. What happened?
Right. So the Attorney General is now investigating how the police enforce this fare evasion. That was because of data that had been collected and published over years that show that it is disproportionately focused on high poverty neighborhoods and neighborhoods of color. But also last month, the New York Times published a story that included affidavits from 8 different police officers saying that they were told to target these people in these communities. So I think the Attorney General's investigation was based off kind of this long-running collection of data and anecdotal evidence, and also the NYPD officers' lawsuit against the city.
And Laura, what led to the crackdown in the first place, the need for the city and, frankly, the state to go after fare jumpers? Was it just simply, we need the money, so we're going to crack down on people who hop turnstiles?
Well, so that's what the MTA and the city say. The idea is that the fare evasion is costing the system hundreds of millions of dollars, and that they need to crack down on these freeloaders to prevent the loss of money. However, that data that has been presented by the MTA, it's not credible. The Inspector General's office itself said that there was serious problems with the methodology used to reach that amount of money that's been lost. So it's really difficult to know how big of a problem fare evasion is and how much money it's costing the city. But that is the argument that the MTA has put forward.
All right, David Jones, I want to hear from you here. And before I do, let's hear from the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo. Here he is back in 2019 addressing the fare evasion issue.
We can argue the numbers. Numbers say subway crime is down. Everyone agrees more needs to be done. And that's any New Yorker you ask, as well as the officials who do the numbers. And that's something that we want to address directly. And we're going to do that by adding an additional 500 officers to the MTA.
More needs to be done, says the governor, David Jones. I think that's obvious. More needs to be done. That's a pretty loose statement. How do you see the balance in New York between the need for money, the need for fares, a system in debt, and how riders, New Yorkers, people who rely on the system, maybe they can't afford it, often can't afford it, how they manage to pay when they can?
Well, this is precisely when I joined the MTA board in 2016. These two issues were already emerging. We knew, and I had joined the board with the explicit effort to try to come up with a half-price fare. Fair fares was something we researched and conceptualized at Community Service Society and began fairly aggressive lobbying with the city of New York, who actually pays for this, not the state or MTA. They have a provision that if they want to set up a special class of people who they want to provide relief for, they can. And that really was the genesis of the half-price fair fares program, which just, I think last week, hit 125,000 people who have signed up.
Now tell me a little bit more about fair fares. Who qualifies and how much do they save?
It's basically you get a half-price fare if your income is below the poverty line, below $24,000 for a family of three. That allows you, once you get certified, the fare is $275. You play half of that. If you get a monthly ticket, you play half of that. So this is a system which basically would allow potentially about 700,000-800,000 people in New York who fit into that category to get some measure of relief. It's not free, but it would provide a major help to people in poverty.
And when you came up with this idea, when your organization forwarded this idea of fair fares, David, what kind of pushback, if any, did you get from people who raise a good argument? This system is $40 billion in debt. We wish it could be half price or free for everyone. The money needs to come from somewhere. Did you get that pushback?
We got the pushback, and actually the legislation and provision was already there. MTA is not paying any of this half-price fare. It is all coming from city tax levy money. So this was a decision that the city of New York for itself, I'd like to see this as a statewide program, but basically the MTA is held harmless here, as is the state. So, and that's the reason we were able to get traction on it, because at least before this, the city was in relatively good shape. The cost is not huge. It's estimated that, and we think overestimated, that fully implemented, it would only cost about $120 million or so, which is a lot of money, but in a system, a city which is, you know, has a budget in the billions, $70, $80 billion, this is not meaningful. Moreover, by allowing people to get to work, to school, the rest, it ultimately has some significant impact in terms of tax revenue that the city ultimately gets down the road as people are able to be productive.
Laura, your reporting, though, reflected kind of a double whammy on a lot of people in your city, which was the people who can least afford to ride in many places are the very people who get disproportionately policed in the crackdown. As well-meaning as the crackdown may have been, the system needs money. I get it. They got hit on both ends.
Right. So what I reported was this new data that the NYPD released after Councilman Rory Lantzman and Community Service Society sued the NYPD for this data. And this data is not only kind of an overview of what's happening in the city, it is a granular station by station accounting of what fare evasion arrests and summons have happened across the city. And by looking at this data, you can see that it is really concentrated in these high poverty neighborhoods, which again signals that this enforcement is functioning as criminalizing poverty. And it's also targeted, it's also focused on areas that are predominantly Black and Latino. So the way that this fare evasion is enforced has become as much of a problem as it is as it was proposed as a solution.
David, Lorraine emailed us this and said, I live on Long Island right outside of New York. I have to use bridges and tunnels through New York with very high tolls to get out of New York State. These tolls subsidize New York City mass transit. I also pay an additional income tax for the same purpose. I rarely use mass transit. I think the people who are actually going to use it should pay something for it. Take just a couple seconds and respond.
Well, the whole region depends upon the energy in New York City, and you can't sort of dice and chop up the system. The people who are riding the subways are the ones who service all these buildings, who are the food service workers, who are providers of basic services from restaurants to hospitals. So the notion that I'm sitting outside and I'm, you know, I paid a high price, everyone else should pay more. It really doesn't work. The city is the engine for the entire state and its economy.
That's David Jones. He's a member of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority in New York. Also speaking with Laura Wagner, who's been reporting on fares and crackdowns on the subway system in New York City. In just a moment, we're going to talk about who jumps fares and why. People have different reasons. One of the big reasons, the main reason, affordability. We're also going to go outside of New York City. We're going to go across America and look at what different towns and cities are doing to lower the cost of public transportation and, in some cases, make it entirely free. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Uber. Uber is committed to safety and to continuously raising the bar to help make safer journeys for everyone. For starters, all drivers are background checked before their first ride and screened on an ongoing basis. And now, Uber has introduced a brand new safety feature called Ride Check, which can detect if a trip goes unusually off course and check in to provide support. To learn more about Uber's commitment to safety, visit uber.com/safety.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle so you can share what you know. On the News Roundup, find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Finding love at work can be exciting, but mixing the personal and professional can be high risk. This week, NPR's Life Kit is talking tips for love in the workplace. Listen and subscribe to Life Kit.
It's 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're talking about the cost of public transportation. And as we've heard, for some New Yorkers, it's costing them their freedom. In other cities, it costs nothing at all. We're going to hear about that in just a moment. We're talking with senior staff writer at Vice, Laura Wagner, and David Jones. He's the president and CEO of the Community Services Society in New York. He's a member of the MTA, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority. Well, in just a minute, we're going to leave New York and go across the country. Look at what cities and towns are doing to cut fares and increase ridership on public transit. So, David, staying in New York for just a minute, let's talk a little bit more about fares, what it costs in cities like New York, where millions of people rely on the trains and on the buses. Some people, we've given some voice to this, are concerned that reducing fares too broadly will make mass transit even worse than it is already in a city like New York. Here's what one listener had to say about the second city.
Hello, I'm Chris calling from Arkansas. I worked for a large transit company, CTA, in Chicago for over 40 years. Many people who were jumping turnstiles had money to pay for a fare, but just did not want to pay a fare. And then when our governor gave out free rides back in the late 90s, it became a big problem for mass transit. You can really find out and check with Chicago and see how the CTA is going. Thank you.
So, David, what do you know about who evades fares in New York and why? I mean, lots of people don't pay because they don't want to. Kids sometimes jump turnstiles because they're kids. But I will say this. Laura's reporting makes it clear that an increasing number of New Yorkers simply cannot afford the public transportation that they absolutely rely on. So what do we know? What do the numbers say about who doesn't pay and why they don't?
Well, it's fascinating because as we know, this is a problem of people who are poor. We did survey work that sort of undergirded the Fair Fares effort, which showed about a quarter of the people in poverty just can't bear the $2.75 a ride. But when the MTA began looking at where fare evasion is most prevalent, it's not in the subways. It's actually bus riders in places like Staten Island and people who really are cannot plead poverty in many cases. And this is another sort of distortion that I think everyone immediately has a vision of an African-American or Latino young person jumping over a turnstile, not little old ladies, not paying when they get on the bus. But in fact, the real revenue hemorrhage going on, in at least in New York, so if we were just talking about money, can we get money, more money back into the system? You have to go about fare evasion that's taking place for other reasons. In Staten Island, there's a sense of we deserve this. We have other parts of the system. We have a free ferry service, and we also have a light rail system that no one is charged on. So when I get on the bus, why should I pay anyway? Then you have people on the Upper East Side, one of the most wealthy areas in the state, where people decide, well, I'm only going three or four blocks. Why should I pay? So we have to get down to the fact that the image of who is really in the forefront of fare evasion is distorted. But then again, we know that many people, this is when a machine doesn't work in a subway or when a young person is trying to get to community college or wherever and doesn't have enough for a swipe and they evade the fare, and then you put them through a whole process of first giving them a $100 summons and then potentially arresting them. This is just not a good way to deploy effort, and it's been discriminatorily impacted. When I first got on the board, they showed us statistics showing that more than 100,000 stops, 93% were black and Latino, and 30,000 arrests, again, more than 90% black and Latino. And yet, when you get down and talk to people, that's not where the real loss is going on in the system. So we strongly believe that this was a disproportionate reaction.
That's the disconnect between who's jumping fares and the enforcement that New York City has chosen for this problem. Laura, what is your reporting show on who evades fares and why? Because you told some of their stories in some of your features.
Right. So I spoke to Cynthia Kozakowski. She's a single mother of four. She has four school-age children. So not only is she responsible for paying for her own Metro fare card, but she also has to make sure her kids also have fares to go to school, to go to their activities. And it's a struggle for her. It's really difficult. I spoke to another teenager out in the Far Rockaways, which is one of, according to the data that we published, has one of the highest rates of fare enforcement, even though it has a relatively low ridership. And he basically said, I hop the turnstiles, but I'm not a criminal. I'm trying to get to where I have to go. And he pointed out that he lives in a very high poverty neighborhood in Queens. He called it the hood of Queens. I mean, this isn't just an abstract thing. This affects real people. And that's where the enforcement part comes in. Because as I mentioned earlier, there is this lawsuit against the city and high-ranking police officers in which current and former NYPD cops allege that their supervisors told them to go after young black and Latino men, not because with the hope that they would have a criminal record. So the idea that this is enforced equally, I think the data shows that it's not. And it's something that, as David pointed out, has real ramifications for the people who live in the city.
Yeah, you're saying the enforcement for something most people would consider minor, fare jumping, was used as a way in for the cops to get people that they already think are guilty of something else.
Right. It's been compared to stop and frisk.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing.
Yeah. So this the lawsuit is ongoing, but I think however that shakes out, and it still could be years from now, we'll have potentially a pretty significant impact on how fare evasion enforcement continues in the
okay.
city.
Okay. Well, we got to leave New York. Before we do, David, real quick, where are fares going for riders in New York? Maintaining the system isn't getting any cheaper. You have free fares in place. 125,000 people have signed up for half-price fares. Can fares be made affordable in the future?
I think we have real problems in New York City because our debt load, it's estimated that 20% of the expenses each year are going to have to go to debt service in the coming years. So we built up an enormous debt load. The system needs to be refreshed, and obviously we've gotten some capital support with a congestion pricing effort. But there's no new infusion yet on the expense side. So at the moment, people are going to be confronting fare increases that almost occur regularly. We've capped it at 4% over in a two-year period, so 2%. But still, we know that so many people can't even afford that. And so this is a system that's going to be struggling, and it's a system that's going to have to be looked at in terms of a permanent solution in terms of external revenue. And we haven't gotten that.
The cost of commuting in New York City, a place where millions and millions of people don't use the subway and the buses as an option, they use them as a necessity. I want to thank David Jones, CEO of the Community Service Society, member of the MTA, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority. David, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Laura Wagner of Vice there in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, who's been covering enforcement for fare evasion in New York. Laura, thanks to you.
Thanks for having me.
So, New York is probably America's capital of public transit. The system is huge, and it's expensive, and they have millions of riders. But here's a question. What would happen if a city didn't have to charge fares at all? Wouldn't a lot of problems go away? Wouldn't a lot of people ride a lot more? Well, joining me now from Cleveland, Ohio, to talk more about how the concept of free fares for mass transit is playing out all across the country, Angie Schmidt. She covers transportation. Angie, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So, Angie, it's hard to base a discussion on transit fares on just New York, because New York is New York. Lots of different cities have lots of different needs, and they're not New York City. Give us a sense of what's going on out there in terms of public transit and how much you pay.
Sure. Yeah. New York, with its Fair Fares program, is part of a trend among the bigger, more progressive cities that have pretty developed transit systems in offering reduced fares to low-income folks. Seattle was kind of a leader with that. In 2015, they launched their Orca Lift program, and that's for anyone living under 200% of the federal poverty rate. They get a $1.50 flat fare. They're doing something similar in San Francisco across the transit systems there, Denver. So that's a big trend. The big agencies are trying to make it more affordable.
So the big agencies are trying to cut costs. Do we know about a success rate? Do we know if those reduced fares are helping people with low incomes ride more, get to work easier? Is it having an impact?
That's a good question. I can't say that well. But another thing that's going on with these more progressive agencies in other parts of the country, in contrast with New York, is they're getting away from criminalizing fare evasion. They're taking a less punitive approach. And because if you make a comparison to sort of like a parking ticket, okay, if people in New York don't pay their parking ticket, or they don't pay their parking meter, they're not being hauled off to jail. The expense of that might be similar. So there's been sort of, in a lot of people's opinion, a disproportionate level of policing related to this this minor offense, which is fare beating, compared to some other similar transportation penalties.
So some of the larger medium-sized cities, as you said, Angie, Seattle, Denver, what other cities did you mention?
San Francisco's Muni.
San Francisco's Muni, some other cities as well, are coming up with reduced. New York City has fare, which is a half-priced fare. These are sort of larger cities. What about smaller cities? What's going on in some smaller communities that are cutting fares deeply and in some cases making getting on the bus entirely free?
Yeah. Kansas City recently made a big splash by making their entire transit system free for riders. Previously, they had operated a streetcar system that was free, but if you got on the bus, you had to pay a fare. Now they've done away with that, and the whole system is free. And a lot of people, because of what's happening with the climate crisis and because of these high-profile police brutality incidents in New York, are looking at that and discussing that as an option.
So what's the main upside from the city planner's perspective, the mayor's office, the head of the Transit Authority, Kansas City? What's the main upside for them in making the buses and the light rail, if they have it, free? Because they're losing money on the front end at the fare box, but they see a big upside. What is it?
Yeah, I think in Kansas City compared to New York, it's more difficult to make transit competitive with driving. They don't have nearly as sophisticated a transit system. And I think in Kansas City also, they're competing with free parking. I mean, we've spent a lot of time talking about, you know, the revenues lost for a few people jumping turnstiles. Meanwhile, for drivers, we're offering free parking pretty much everywhere across the country. Almost all driving trips end with a free parking spot, and the expense of that is just sort of no one even considers it.
Yeah.
So they're having to compete with that, and I think that they're hoping it'll make transit more competitive.
Well, Mythical Red Fox tweeted this and said, "I think free fares is a perfectly reasonable option. If we want to reduce traffic congestion and pollution and the burning of fossil fuels, we should do everything we can to encourage public transit ridership. If you're a driver, you benefit too. More riders on public transit means less traffic for you." Angie, what do we know about the connection between cost at the fare box and usage? In other words, what do we know about how having a free fare, I get on the bus, I don't even have to take out my wallet, how that drives increased bus ridership?
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see from Kansas City. And some agencies, most notably Boulder, experimented with this in the 1990s, and they had kind of a mixed impact, because one of the things about transit is it's not just the cost of a fare that's a limiting factor for people, but also the amount of time it takes. So in Kansas City, if it's going to take you twice as long or longer to take transit than to drive, saving a couple dollars might not be enough to motivate you to switch.
Yeah, well, Kathy says this from Alexandria, Virginia on Facebook. "The reason I don't ride buses isn't the price. It's that they don't come often enough. You can wait an hour or more for a bus. If they make the buses free, that won't change my usage. More frequent buses would make a difference for me." And it sounds like Kathy's talking about the dynamic that you're talking about, Angie. It's the convenience, not the price for some people.
Right. And that's something actually a lot of transit advocates are concerned about with this movement, is if the free fares come from money that could be used to expand service, and service is already lacking, then it could have a negative impact. So I think one thing that cities should consider when they're thinking about this is, where do the revenues come from?
And in smaller cities, I was told, you know, sometimes smaller cities like Kansas City or a smaller town can consider free buses because they don't get a lot of their overall revenue from the fare box in the first place. They get it from somewhere else in the budget. So, you know, if they get 10% of their revenue from the fare box, why not make it free? Riders love it. Not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I sort of agree. And a lot of these smaller agencies, it might be 20% or less of revenues. And also there's significant cost to collecting the fares. They have to purchase, you know, the systems, and they have to monitor, like in Cleveland where I live, we have a whole police force that's related to our transit system that goes around enforcing fares. So all that stuff is costly. So they even if it's 20% of revenues, they might have to spend a certain percentage of that just collecting them.
Meanwhile, Angie, a big city, we talked about New York, here in Washington, D.C., could they realistically ever operate a system without fares? Is it even within the realm of possibility for a giant system like that?
I think something would have to change about our commitment to transit in a radical way. I mean, the way the status quo is right now, MTA gets about $5 billion annually, I believe, in fare revenues. So that would be a lot of money to come up with in another way. It really depends on the political will, I think. Right now, it looks like a much bigger hurdle for the bigger agencies, but for some of the smaller ones, it might be more feasible.
And not to mention the legacy debt. As we heard from New York, they're already $40 billion in debt, plus they got to maintain all those trains. It's not just about keeping the system going year to year. You got to keep all the tracks and the trains updated. Well, coming up, are smaller cities a better fit for free fares? We're going to go to one small city, Lawrence, Massachusetts, where you can ride the bus for nothing. More from our guests and from you in just a moment. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor LegalZoom. LegalZoom can help make sure your small business is set up for success this year. LegalZoom has helped more than 2 million Americans incorporate, form an LLC, and more. You can also get advice on contracts, lease agreements, and other legal questions through LegalZoom's network of independent attorneys, since they're not a law firm. More information is available at LegalZoom.com/NPR.
NPR Music is looking for the next great undiscovered musician. Think you got what it takes? Enter the Tiny Desk Contest. Send us a video of you playing an original song. You could play a Tiny Desk concert and go on tour. Find out more and see the official rules at npr.org/Tiny Desk Contest.
It's 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. I'm talking to the former editor of Streets blog, Angie Schmidt. She's currently working on a book about the pedestrian safety crisis. And joining us now is Dan Rivera. He's the mayor of Lawrence, Massachusetts. And Mr. Mayor, you're here because riding the bus in Lawrence, Massachusetts, well, it's a lot like love. It don't cost a thing. Am I right?
Yeah, we focus on the three major lines that go through our city, and we made them free.
Totally free. Three major lines. How did this decision come about?
Well, you know, we first started talking about the major city for us is Boston. They were talking about how do you make the T free, and I thought, you know, how would we do that? So I asked the person who runs my transit authority, you know, how much do you get on the 85 line a year for fares? And he said it was $35,000, and I thought that's not really that much money. And then I said, well, you know, if I gave you $35,000, would you let the people on that line ride free? And he kind of thought about it for a while, and he said, yeah, I would do that. And so I said, well, you know, it's kind of a small number. What if I gave you what are the two other lines that run through the city? How much does that cost? And it ended up being like all three lines going through the city was like $95,000 in fares. And that's an important piece because people think, oh, it's everything's free. We're already, the state, the federal government, and the city is already subsidizing the ride probably 95%, if not 98% of the way anyway. And so then you say, okay, well, that last bit, how much was it? And it ended up being like $100,000 for a year's worth of fare free on these three lines. And so I went to the city council and I asked for 2 years' worth of money. They passed it, and our people on those three lines. And by the way, these are lines that go through some of the poorest census tracts in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and they're through some of our poorest neighborhoods. And they're going to, one of them actually goes through the industrial park where there's jobs. They go by schools. They go by hospitals. People are using it not only to go to work, to go to school, but they're also going to go see doctors and appointments of that nature.
Yeah, I want to hear more about these lines and where they go, because that's critical. It's one thing to say buses in the downtown core are free. That's pleasant going between, you know, Starbucks and a Panera. Doesn't get you a lot in terms of people's real lives. Tell me more about these lines and who's riding.
Think about it this way. And the only way, again, just be clear about this, I'm a big fan of good government. You got to run the enterprise well. You got to save money. You got to bring in all the right types of revenue. We could not have done this if we didn't balance our budget and we didn't have $16 million parked in our reserves. Now, I could build that reserve to $20 million or $30 million as a reserve, but, you know, I have a community that could use that resources, and it doesn't make sense, although it makes sense to Wall Street for me to park it and be in a good financial situation. It doesn't make much sense to me to have people with real need not have services. So this is a way for us to use that reserve money to provide services to people. And what we found when we did the surveys is that, you know, close to 90% of the people riding it were using it to go to work. And, you know, around 80% of the people were using it. Had, you know, less than $20,000 in annual income. So the poorest folks were using it for free, and they're going not just to appointments, which some of them were, some of the elderly folks were in fixed income situations, but they were also using it to go to work. I think it hits all the right spots for us. I could not have spent $225,000 in a better way, because we got some money for publicity too.
Mm, yeah, and some national media attention doesn't hurt. What's happened to ridership?
It's up 24%. There's a bunch of students that were having to pay to go because they were outside the footprint of the school system. We're going to go talk to the school system about getting some of that money back in. But mostly people who are taking it 2 and 3 times a day to go to appointments and go to different parts of the city, they're just not paying. And again, if you think your income is $30,000 a year for the whole family, $2 a day is not. It is a big lot. It's a lot of money for you. So if you could save $80, $90, even $100 a month on something like this, it's real money for food and for necessities and for rent, which is way too high.
Now, Angie Schmidt, get in on this, because Mayor Rivera there in Lawrence, Massachusetts, he didn't have a real long way to go in terms of the budget. For $250,000 a year, can make buses much more accessible for people who really need it. Is Lawrence a special case? Can other places replicate?
I think it's great. One example I wanted to mention was Columbus, Ohio. They have not gone fully fare-free, but a few years ago, they implemented a system where all the downtown workers get free bus passes. And that was paid for by an association of downtown businesses that didn't want to have to pay for the construction, or they didn't want the government to have to fund the construction of new parking garages, because parking was really tight, and building parking garages is very expensive. They can't charge the kind of rates in Columbus that it would pay for itself, so it would have had to been subsidized. Instead, they put $5 million over 2.5 years into free transit passes in Columbus, and the number of downtown commuters using transit to get to work increased by 100%. It doubled.
So, Angie, how does this help a growing city manage growth? The old way for a growing city was to grow, density increases in the core. You build more lanes, you build more space for cars. I mean, there are people listening to me across America right now going, oh yeah, I sit on the beltway, I sit on the interstate, I sit on the arterial for an hour and 20 minutes a day because of this. So how does free fare in the city, in a way like Columbus is doing, or reduced fare anyway, help to manage growth?
I think we're already paying money as taxpayers to operate these systems, and they might as well be moving as many people as is efficient for them. Columbus didn't have to spend extra money on COTA, is my understanding, and they were able to get, more value out of it by putting thousands of extra people on their buses going downtown every day. So that's sort of a win-win, especially compared to the cost of parking. Mm. So I definitely think it's something more people should look at, or more towns.
Mayor, go ahead.
And on buses, some of these buses are riding empty. They're riding really not at capacity at all. And that was one of the things you're finding, not on the three major lines. They had people on them, but they weren't running at capacity. We haven't dealt with the point of, if there's so many people riding it and we had to add a bus, how does that change the financial equation? We'll have to, jump off that bridge when we get to it. But the reality is that you just have to tell the bureaucracy, hey, we know it's going to cost money. By the way, we're sunk all the time. I was doing some math around what 500 new police officers in the subways of New York cost.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say if you're on average, you're calling about $100,000 a cop, but it's more because you have sergeants and lieutenants who have to run those people. So $50 million is going to cost to put those people on the street. You could do a $50 million as far as fare is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, I think somebody said $50 billion is what they collect in fares. It doesn't have to be every line. It's just the lines that are important to folks in the most needy communities. And so that's what we did. It's not all the lines. It's just the lines with the most need. And if you get those people working and with the mobility, the big M mobility, not just moving, they're going to become more productive parts of the community. They're going to see more. They're going to get access to more, maybe get better education and have a healthier lifestyle. All those things, not to mention the environmental impact. But $50 million to put 500 cops, that's a very visual thing. But you put that towards fares, you might not even see it because it's all these people going in and out. But that's going to have a bigger societal impact than chasing guys for jumping a turnstile.
Mayor, the three lines that are free now, how big a percentage is that to your whole system? How many lines do you have total?
That come through the city. Well, we're a hub, so all of them come through. I'd say that's 3 of 15.
three out of 15, but to the neediest areas, the people who need it most. What kind of pushback did you get, Mayor, when you started to come up with this idea? You went to your comptroller, you said, how can we do this? But I'm guessing that a lot of people in city government hear reduced revenue, they hear free fare, and they just tense up.
Well, because I was going to use reserve money, the initial reaction from the city council was, hey, what are we doing here? And then, you know, when the idea really hit them, I got, you know, a majority of the folks to pass the thing. But as long as the math works for them, the bureaucracy has been okay with it. And again, I said the issue is going to be if we have to add a bus. Do we haven't hit that mark yet, that watermark yet? But no one has really gotten out of the way. Again, and that's not to toot my horn. I'm actually, you know, we have a huge team of people that make the city run well, so I don't want to make it seem like it's about me, but leadership does matter. You know, if the mayor of New York wanted to do that, a few people would stand in that person's way because they're the mayor. You know, I mean, that's the power and influence of high office. And just like the governor can pick up the phone and put 500 cops in the subway, he could do something similar to it in a different way. And a lot of people would get out of the way because it's just one of those things. Now, you'd have to horse trade and get stuff like this passed, but it has such a huge impact. And so we went from people being concerned about the money to people being concerned about we're not doing enough lines. So they want to do more bus lines, you know. They're like, hey, can we grow it? And I'm like, yeah, we can. It's just going to cost us money, just like it did cost us money. We put probably about 60 new police officers in our police department. That cost us money. And I think what we found in the conservative circles of government, they've made it seem so government's always too expensive. Let's not use government, and government's useless to get some of these problems solved. And if you don't run the transit authority well, then they're right. But if you run it well and you save your money and you do the things right by citizens and taxpayers will be fine with spending that money that way. But if you're spending that money and they're not feeling the impact in a quality ride or access or you know, more service, then they're going to be like, listen, don't tax me for that. That's not what we want.
So, Angie, in a way, we're talking about two extremes. New York City, massive ridership, massive budget, massive debt, massive problems. And Lawrence, Massachusetts, which was able to take a budget surplus, a surplus fund, apply it to fares on three lines and make a huge impact for people who need it the most. These are sort of two extremes. How are other cities handling what might really be the budget trade-offs for them as they decide on free fares in some places or reduced fares?
Yeah, I mean, there's still only a few cities that have made a commitment to go fare-free. But I think one thing to keep in mind is, and I think what the mayor in Lawrence has done that's really smart is to focus on service. Like New York is sweating, you know, a few $100 million in supposed fare evasion, but a lot of those people wouldn't have paid and ridden in the first place if they had to. So I think that's sort of the wrong way to look at it. And they should think about how can we attract more people to the services we're offering so that we can get more revenue that way. And I think that the really punitive approach they're using with the police can actually really scare people off. People from these groups that are being targeted will be, they may be frightened to use transit, and that will hurt revenues overall. So I think of the smarter approach, and New York has done a little bit of this on 14th Street recently. They cleared the cars off the road and they made it a transit corridor. And I know that ridership is way up along that route. So I think New York needs to start thinking about those kind of things more and less about this really punitive approach that has gotten them a lot of bad publicity.
Well, maybe they'll take some lessons from small town America, go to Lawrence, Massachusetts. Mayor, what about traffic? Have you seen any measurable effect on the amount of people in cars?
No, I think that's been the fight that we have. I think we have 45,000 something registered vehicles in the city of Lawrence, 6.7 square miles, and we have only about 90,000 people live here. So anybody who's old enough to have a license seems like they own a car in our city. Sometimes there's incredible gridlock. And so we haven't seen that much. I mean, 24% growth is good for the bus, but it hasn't hit the cars yet because cars are so pervasive. And the problem that we've had with that is that it's basically people's only asset in the world. It becomes these cars. So that's, I think, a bigger fight to get people out of their cars and into the bus. The free part of the bus is helping that. But I think long-term, especially, here's the big thing that's really funny is that when they come from the Dominican Republic or they come from Guatemala and they live in those cities in those other countries, the number one way they get around is the bus.
Yeah.
you know, they don't, few people have as many vehicles, and they have more progressive, fair costs. And if you own a car in, you know, let's say Mexico City, you have to pay a lot of money to own a car in Mexico City.
And not here, so the incentives can be totally flipped. Well, before we go, Mayor, just, you know, a lot of people now might be looking toward Lawrence, Massachusetts. What are some of the lessons learned here about offering free buses? You were able to do it with a budget surplus. What can you tell people about how scalable this might be for their town?
So I think two things. One is, don't listen to the bureaucracy. It's going to tell you the 100 reasons why you can't do it. And then pick a route and do it. And then understand what the impact is in your community on that one route. Because, you know, of course, to do the whole system free is a huge elephant to eat. But maybe you can do it by one bite at a time, and do it on the most important line for folks who are most needy. Because then those people, guess what's going to happen? You're going to engage them. Government doesn't feel like it works for people nowadays. So no one's going to the polls. No one's seeing it as an answer to anything. But there was a time where, you know, for the neediest of us, to get us through American society, government was one of those tools. I'm not talking, you know, $1,000 a month, you know, universal paycheck. I think that's crazy. I'm a big fan of work and the dignity of work. This is one thing you can do without actually giving it to people. People have to still use it. You know what I'm saying? You have to be an active participant in it. And I think if you do that, one line in your whatever big or small system, and, you know, ignore the bureaucracy, because that's all you can't.
Well, Angie, the last word to you. The mayor says don't bite off too big of an elephant. Pick one line and just do it.
Yeah. Like I said, I think that's really the right approach, is to be thinking about what works for individual communities. It's going to be very localized. But if this is an issue that gets folks excited about transit and excited about how it can contribute to the challenges we're facing with our climate and our inequality in our society overall, I think it's great.
And Angie, is this how it works city to city? You see, mayors are connected all the time. Are other cities paying attention to what mayors like Rivera are doing and maybe copying?
Absolutely. I think Kansas City, they got a lot of press about their decision, and it's inspired some other cities to talk about it too. To think about this kind of stuff more critically, because it wasn't handed down from God that, you know, transit fares should be $2.75 and parking should be free. People made that decision at some point.
No, it was not. And sometimes it seems like the comptrollers are God there in City Hall. But if you make the right decisions, hey, you can make bus riding free, and like it is in Lawrence, Massachusetts, for the people who need it most. Dan Rivera is the mayor of Lawrence. Mr. Mayor, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And Angie Schmidt, transportation writer. Angie, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
This conversation was produced by Emmanuel Johnson and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the website at the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU. It's part of American University in Washington. It's distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Todd Zwillick. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.